And now, it's BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the show today. It's Big Reds for a big new year. We thought we'd start out with that. The weather sort of cooperates this time of the year for Big Red Wines. We're going to take you to Di Martino Vineyards. They're located on Isla de Maipo, not too far from the center of Santiago. It's a very prestigious region for winemaking in the Maipo Valley and all of Chile. And it's a fun place. It's an old place, but there's been so much redevelopment done there in terms of what goes on in the vineyards and the wineries. And often I think North Americans overlook Chile. They always, you know, think it should be in the bargain bin. And when in fact we're talking about some of the best suited properties for the production of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, anywhere in the world. So that's interesting. And of course, Di Martino has led the way with many different varieties and a much different attitude. They sort of turned the ship around about 20 years ago when they abandoned French oak barriques and really started to concentrate on developing the flavors in their wines that reflected where they came from. So we'll be looking at that later on the show. We're going to travel to California wine country with guest spots from Master Sommeliers, two good friends of the show, Evan Goldstein and Jillian Valance. We're going to talk about Cabernet Sauvignon and other red varieties grown in California and particularly in the Napa Valley. And then from California, we're going to travel back to British Columbia, Black Sage Bench, to recall a conversation on Black Hills wine with red winemaker Ross Wise. In fact, he's the master of wine and a director of winemaking at Black Hills, and he also oversees all the winemaking for Andrew Peller in BC. Ross is going to talk a bit about their famous icon wine, Nota Bene, but also about his new explorations with Tempranillo and Carmenere. But up next, Marco Antonio, fourth generation owner of Di Martino Winery, joins us. It's Big Reds for a big year, and you are set to go.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Escape to Tinhorn Creek Vineyards on the captivating Golden Mile Bench in the heart of Oliver's Wine Country. Their wine shop awaits you Thursdays through Sundays from 11:30 to 4:30. Embrace the season with their Blanc de Blanc Sparkling, adding a lively note to your winter wanderings. Explore the wonders of the South Okanagan, where nature's beauty meets the art of winemaking. Plan your visit at tinhorn.com. Ready to welcome you.
Attention wine connoisseurs, Iron Gate Auctions are bringing you the chance to indulge in some of the most exquisite back vintage wines from Canada's most exclusive private collections. Each bottle sold individually so you can pick and choose to your heart's content. With an average of 3,000 available per auction, there is something for everyone at all price points. And the best part? Inexpensive temperature controlled delivery available right to your door. Visit irongateauctions.com to start bidding now.
Hi, this is Paige Schultz, Marketing Manager at Visit Penticton. Did you know that Apex Mountain Resort is just 30 minutes away from Penticton? Joining me is James Schulman, General Manager at Apex Mountain Resort. James, what makes Apex such a great winter destination?
Apex offers incredible terrain with over 80 runs, short lift lines, and beautiful champagne powder, plus tubing and skating. We also host some fantastic events such as Vertical and Vintages.
Vertical and Vintages. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
It's an incredible social evening of wine tasting taking place February 3rd from 6 to 10 p.m. All the participating wineries are from the South Okanagan, which is home to over 300 wineries. The Gumbrel Saloon will also be providing an array of tasty appetizers to pair with your wines.
Amazing. Thanks, James.
You're most welcome.
Plan your vacation now. For information on all events and activities in Penticton, and for those looking to visit this winter, go to visitpenticton.com.
At Noble Vines, they believe the best brings out the best. That's why they take only the most admired vines to develop their wines, including the 242 Sauvignon Blanc, which originated in Bordeaux, France. These superior vine stocks adapted well to their premier vineyards in Monterey, California, producing a medium-bodied wine with bright acidity, zesty aromas of ripe lemon, and flavors of golden peach with lime. Available exclusively through BCL Select at your local BC liquor store. Find out more at noblevines.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, from Salmon Arm to Summerland and all 25 cities in total that are part of our BC Food and Wine Radio Network. On the show today, our focus is Big Reds for what we hope is going to be a big new year. Now, here's our conversation with Marco Antonio. He's a fourth-generation owner at DeMartino Winery in the Alto Maipo Valley, just outside of Santiago, Chile. Marco, how are you today?
Fine. Very, very good, Anthony. Pleasure to be here with you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. DeMartino has a long history. Why don't we start there with the winery? Where are you? When did you get started? And where are you today, sort of thing?
Sure. We're based in the Maipo Valley, which is an hour away from Santiago in central Chile. Santiago is the capital city, the main city of our country. And we're an hour away from there in Maipo, which is one of the most renowned wine-producing regions in Chile. Our winery was founded almost 90 years ago. We're turning 90 next year, in 1934, by my Italian family, actually, that came before the war, and then another part of the family after the war, and they started the winery here. The winemaking was their daily job back in Italy. So sure. it made a logical choice to start making wines again, but in Chile. So for the first years, it was mostly making wine in bulk for the first 30, 40 years. Then start bottling wines, and then start selling the wines as our own brand, and then starting to export the wines to other markets as the Chilean economy opened up. So it's pretty much the same story that you will heard in some other regions, especially in Italy or in France, of people making wine for everyday consumption and then progressing into bottling their own wines, discovering the potential of their terroirs and trying to highlight those potentials in a wine and in a domain, as the French call but.
You're the fourth generation. I know that things have changed a lot in Chile. Maybe people in North America don't know it as well, but let's talk about the sort of seminal change that happened at DeMartino. You were making wines, exporting them to London, making a style, a style that Robert Parker was enamored with at the time and many of the buyers. But things have changed. Tell us a little bit about what the thinking and what's going on at DeMartino.
We were making wine in this pretty much like international style, very much influenced by Michel Roland in a way, which was, Michel Roland was very famous in Chile back in those days. I'm talking about the early 2000s, basically. So we started to make wines in that style, with a lot of ripeness, higher alcohols, a lot of new French oak in there as well. Wines that were very impressive, but at the same time, we end up realizing that those wines, had, besides being, very good with technically, they were lacking a little bit in identity in terms of showing really where they came from.
No soul. They had no soul.
Yeah. Exactly. Their soul, in a way, they were good ones, but they were not talking about where they came from, their origins, or Maipo in a way, and the other regions we work with. So we decided, almost going to be 15 years now, that we make an important change. Right about the time in which my brother and I were going back to the winery and trying to managing the winery. So we make a family decision in terms of moving away from that style, that more international style, and trying to highlight what we think are the most important characteristics of our terroir, and that involved a lot of study in viticulture and moving away from overripeness, moving away from new oak, looking for freshness, moderate alcohols, using oak, but neutral oak and so on. It's
a, yeah, it's a, complete, a sense of place.
I mean, I think wine, I think the wines we're making now are much more similar to the wines that my grandparents were making than the ones that my father was making, actually. Yeah.
That's interesting. Hey, our guest is Marco Antonio Di Martino. He's a fourth generation owner of the Di Martino Winery in Chile. I've got three wines in front of me that sort of represent where you're going. They're also in the market here in Vancouver. So I wonder if we could just quickly say a few things. I want to start with the Maipo Ungrafted Gravel Soils Cabernet Sauvignon. It's a fantastic label and name. What's the story of this wine?
I mean, we wanted to show a little bit of Maipo, Isla de Maipo in particular, which is the place within the Maipo Valley in which we're based. And with a Cabernet that's very traditional Cabernet from Maipo style, medium body, fresh acidity, nice silky tannins. The name Ungrafted comes really because the material, the vines, the selection of the vines come from very old selections that came from France, from Bordeaux, specific before Phylloxera. So it's a very old genetic material in a way.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the secrets of Maipo besides the gravel soils as well. So we wanted to highlight that. And besides that, we don't have any phylloxera in Chile. So the vines are planted in their own roots, which is something quite unique in the wine world right now.
Yeah. I would say very unique, and for people who've never had ungrafted vines, this is a great wine to understand the intensity of flavors that you can get from having the natural rootstock of the vine going right into the earth. Hey, let's talk a bit about Carmenere. You guys are pretty famous for Carmenere as well. The Alto de Pietras, is that the high stones or the high mountains? How would you describe that?
Yeah, Alto de Piedras, it means it's like a small stone hill. Really, translate to a stone hill in English. It's a section of our vineyard in which we have deep gravel soils, and it's where we planted our first Carmenere vineyard. But when we planted the Carmenere vineyard, we were actually looking to plant for a Merlot vineyard back in 1992. And then in 1994, what we thought was Merlot was discovered that was actually Carmenere, another variety. From Bordeaux as well, but totally different from Merlot. So we did some analysis and came up to, and realized that what we had and what we thought we had planted as Merlot was actually close to 85% Carmenere, and the rest was a little bit of Cabernet Franc. So no Merlot at all in the vineyard. But again, we made the wine. It impressed, and it was something new. It impressed a little bit some clients we had, and so we decided to label it as Carmenere with the 1996 vintage back in 1997. So it's been a while now. It was a big thing back in those days because Merlot was obviously most widely known and commercially more viable than Carmenere, but we decided to raise the flag of the Carmenere.
Marco, it's a very delicious wine and a very, I don't even want to say varietally correct. It's a very Chilean wine, and I think that, if that was your purpose and is your purpose today, you're really achieving it through these two wines. They tell great stories.
Thank you.
I need to move on to the final wine. I had a chance to go to Itata with Pedro Pera many years ago when the region was just opening up again to wine. Tell us about this special place and this wine, Las Olvidadas.
Yeah, this is actually what we think is the origins, the real origins of Chilean wines are in the Itata Valley. The Itata Valley is the oldest winemaking region in Chile. This is where the Spaniards first settled and started producing wine almost 500 years ago. It's a region that's close to the Pacific. We're talking about 20 kilometers more or less from our vineyard to the Pacific, so it gets a little bit of that ocean, cool climate, ocean influence. The soils are decomposed granite, very old soils. So in terms of climate and soils, the terroir is quite interesting. And then we have really old vines. In this case, Las Olvidadas is País, which is also called Mission Grape, for instance, in California. And it was the main grape variety that the Spaniards brought to the Americas at the beginning. So it was a very hardy variety in terms of it can withstand drought, extreme weather conditions, and always yield a decent crop. So that's why it was mostly used by priests and the name Mission and so on. So we decided to make a país from a vineyard that's older than it's almost two. We believe that it's more than 200 years old, but we don't have any documents to prove that. We know it's more than 150, but it's a really old vineyard, dry farm. It's a really original and true expression of país and this very unique and rustic area, Itata.
Yeah. This is a fascinating wine, of course, a historical wine, and yet it's a wine for the young generation today to drink, to actually really connect with the history of Chile, the history of the planting of vines there, and of course to talk about vines that survive 200 years are smarter than most human beings, I would say, at this point when we look around the world. So I love to try wines from there. It's fantastic. They're in the market. All of these wines are in Vancouver, in the market, in specialty wine stores. And it's just exciting to see these new wines. You feel good about the direction of Chile today and where it's headed on the world wine market?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's always going to be a place for everybody. I mean, the big wineries, which are a little bit more commercial, their approach. But I think that there's a new generation of winemakers that are going back to the roots, rediscovering, I mean, old stuff, like old vineyards of País or the old clonal material from the old selections, really. From Maipo, and really looking into our heritage and what makes Chile and really unique. I think that would be like the real concept. I mean, going back and trying to understand what makes us different, what is the essence of the wine that we're making here, the real personality, and embracing that, not trying to mimic something else that's been done in another place.
Sure.
In another region of the world, but trying to really highlight our personality and show the best of it, and making wines that are honest and are really transmitting the terroirs we have and the conditions we have. I think the younger generation is understanding that and is pushing a lot into that direction.
Marco, a real pleasure to talk to you today and a great pleasure to try these three wines, all of them available here in Vancouver. I hope that we'll see you sometime soon in Vancouver, or maybe I'll catch up with you down in Chile.
I hope that I have the chance to visit you over there. So thank you. It's been great to have this conversation with you and showing a little bit of our wine.
That was Marco Antonio, fourth generation owner of Di Martino. Still to come, Ross Wise, Master of Wine, Director of Winemaking at Black Hills Winery on the Black Sage Bench.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Penticton, the hub of the South Okanagan. The place for winter adventure and Okanagan wine. Enjoy champagne powder and après-ski at Apex Mountain or Baldy Resort, or step into cross-country skiing at Nickel Plate Nordic Center. After a day in the snow, slow down and experience one of over 80 nearby wineries with an intimate winter wine tasting. Before you go to Penticton, make sure to check the website for information on tasting room hours, winter highway, and ski hill conditions. And for more trip inspiration, go to visitpenticton.com. What happens when you combine the finest wine grapes with a uniquely rocky terroir? Clos du Soleil invites you to discover the answer. Located in the heart of the Similkameen Valley, Clos du Soleil have dedicated themselves to crafting wines that are a true reflection of this wild and beautiful place. Elegant, ageable, and authentic. Clos du Soleil, where the spirit of the Similkameen speaks through every bottle. Available at closdusoleil.ca and fine restaurants and wine stores near you.
Your favorite wines delivered right to your door. It's easy when you become a Liber Estates Rebel. Rebel Wine Club members enjoy regular shipments of Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings, VIP treatment at the winery, and more. And with easy and convenient online ordering, your wine will be at your door before you know it. Discover more at LiberEstates.com. Simply great wine.
One of the best things about drinking wine today is that inexpensive wine has never been better. Helping you to improve your wine knowledge and find great buys in the marketplace has been a lifelong goal of mine because once you become a savvy shopper, you can influence retailers to start selling better wines at better prices. So learning just a little bit more about wine can improve the local selection in your neighborhood. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and I invite you to visit us at gismondionwine.com to become a savvy shopper and drink better wine.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
This love has taken its toll on me. She said goodbye too many times.
Hello, British Columbia. Our guest is Ross Wise. He's the GM and Director of Winemaking for Andrew Peller. Across British Columbia, and of course he makes the wine at his home Black Hills Estate Winery on the Black Sage Bench. Ross, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Fun to have you here. We're going to talk about red wine at Black Hills, or maybe even in general, but let's start with Black Hills. When you came to Black Hills, they were known for one red wine, mostly, Nota Bene.
Yep.
And a lot of people bought it every year and sold it out. Was that a surprise to you, or like when you have one wine there, how do you attack the whole group now?
That's a good question. Yeah. Actually, I didn't realize the passion that was behind Nota Bene from our club members and the general public. So yeah, that was a bit of an eye opener. But yeah, it was certainly the leader, and there was still that same other SKUs that we're working with now. I think what I wanted to do was give the other wines their own identity too, and let them stand on their own feet alongside Nota Bene.
So. Yeah. So, well, let's talk about the lineup in general. So what are some of the grapes you're working with, and how have they funneled into individual labels?
Sure, yeah. So we've always had the Carmenere there, so that's still standalone, a club-only Carmenere, which has got an equally passionate following.
What do you think about Carmenere in BC?
You know what? I kind of like it. I was on the fence when I started, but I've grown to like it. I really like its texture, and it tends to get full ripeness at about 13% alcohol, which I really like as well.
Yeah.
It's quite fresh, so I call that climate change proof. It's one that's got a few legs as we warm up.
It doesn't get too herby like the Chilean one, or?
It's certainly pretty savory and peppery, but our customers seem to love that, so it's good. Syrah is another one that's always been on the books, and I love working with Syrah. And then obviously the Bordeaux blends and the Cab Syrah we make. So we make Cab Syrah Ipso Facto, which is probably our biggest, boldest wine. Addendum, which is our Merlot showcase, and Per Se, which is our Cab Franc showcase.
Yeah. You got your hand in all the varieties.
Yeah, it's good fun. Yeah, I don't know. I think all the varieties do so well on the Black Sage Bench. Yeah. It's nice to give them a little showcase. But ultimately, I think they're better as blends. So I always think a bit of Merlot helps the Per Se, the Cab Franc.
We all thought Harry McWaters was crazy when he planted red varieties. I mean, it's only been since 1990 that the Black Sage Bench has come alive that way. And probably only since 2010 that they've started to ripen properly as well.
Yeah, that's probably a fair comment. I think I'm actually looking back at some of the old Nota Bene's. I mean, 03, which was a really hot year, it's still a stunning wine. So, but now that's sort of our normal year, sort of level. So, yeah, I think we're really into the Cab Sauv, Syrah, Cab Franc ripening zones now.
Well, we're going to talk about a very unusual wine in my estimation, your Tempranillo. Some early Tempranillo was undrinkable in BC and Washington. But I have been surprised over the last two decades how it's evolved and adapted.
Yeah, and as we were talking about climate change, I think it's one with a big future here in BC. So, yeah, we've been making Tempranillo since, I think it was 2016. It was before I started, from one of our previous vineyard manager's block just near in east of Soyuz, actually. So we had a small plot there and made a tiny volume. It was our smallest production every year. But we like what we saw, and we've actually decided we're going to plant 2 more acres of it this coming vintage. So, I think on the Black Sage Bench, on the slopes again, I think we've got great ripening potential. It is actually a mid to early ripening variety.
So
I think it's got great potential for us.
It's incredible, the texture in this wine. How is that achieved?
I don't know. To me, I make all our Black Hills wines kind of like they're a Pinot Noir. I'm a little bit different that way. So it's all whole berry fermentation, very gentle in terms of pump overs.
I'm going to stop you again. So whole berry fermentation.
Yeah.
Why are you doing that? What's the result?
Yeah. So to me, it gives us more control over how we extract the tannins later on. So we're not crushing the berry at harvest. We're sending it to the tank as whole berries for the most part.
Yeah.
And then they'll just sort of crush themselves gently over time.
Yeah.
And we'll pump a bit of juice over the top. So it gives us a longer extraction to get the sort of tannin and texture profile we're looking for, but I think it gives us more control over it. So yeah. It extends the time in the fermentation, but yeah, helps us to shape that texture.
They're wonderful tannins, but as we say, sometimes tannin is not just tannin. Like, they can be really rough and sticky and tough, yeah. Or they can be dense and sweet, like these ones are. You know, they give you structure, but they don't dry you out.
Yeah, and it's tricky in BC. Like, we have such a short growing season and so much sunlight that we tend to get huge amounts of tannin, but it's not always super ripe tannin, so you do have to be really careful with it in the mm-hmm. in the cellar. So that's sort of my approach, the whole berry gentle pump over approach to extract the best out of it.
Our guest is Ross Wise. He's the GM and Director of Winemaking for Andrew Peller Limited across British Columbia, but of course he makes the wines at Black Hill Estate Winery, and we're talking about the 2020 Tempranillo. This wine looks like it's going to go the distance of maybe 5, 7, 10 years.
Yeah, it's a good question. We haven't tried a lot of the older Tempranillo. Obviously, we've only been making it for 6 years or so. But I agree. I think it's got the structure. It's I think it's got 10 years potential, no problem.
Yeah, a lot of controversy about screw caps and corks still. Well, where do you stand in the group? You're in charge of a lot of wineries, so how do you deal with that?
Oh, big question. I personally like corks. I find them. I think it's a really good sustainable option. It's actually the capsules that I don't like, so I'll move away from them hopefully. But
yeah.
But screw caps are great for keeping wine fresh. They really are. I think they're approachable. I think probably sommeliers and restaurants love them.
Like to open them, yeah.
Yep. So I think there is a good place for screw
caps. And corks are better today than they ever have been.
They definitely are. And yeah, you can get scan tested corks to eliminate the cork taint risk, I guess. Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about stewardship, owning land, taking care of it. What's the theme at Peller in BC now? What are you achieving under that?
Yeah, so overall at Peller, we're certainly looking at sustainability as sort of the minimum standard, I guess you could say, in the process of certifying all of our blocks that way.
Mm-hmm.
Black Hills, we've been in conversion to organics, I would say, for 3 years, so in transition, and we will be certified next year. So that's a big step for us.
Wow.
But it's also, I would think, the first step for us. I'd say it's a minimum point, and we're exploring regenerative viticulture as our next step. So that's going to be a lot of work, and there's a lot of learnings we have to do.
Wow, you're going to be out there with the cows.
That's the best part, yeah. Get some animals in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I mean, Peller, like joining Mission Hill, that's a lot of wine that's being made organically now in a small area.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense in the Okanagan. We don't get a lot of rainfall, which brings the diseases,
mildews.
Yep. So you still have to be on top of it, especially from flowering for the 6 weeks after that. But I remember Olivia Humbrick said, if you can't farm organically in the Okanagan, you can't do it anywhere.
Anywhere. So, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So that's our plan.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Black Hills. There's still lots of time left in the seasons. You know, a lot of people got scared off when the valley was shut down. It's wide open now. What can you tell us about what's going on? There must be rooms available and people are open for business.
Yeah, definitely. It's a great time of year to come and visit. It's probably the perfect weather, mid-20s every day. The sun's been shining for a week or so now. We don't have any smoke or wildfire issues like we had earlier in August. So, yeah, it's a perfect time to visit. We get a lot of wine buyers coming at this time of year.
That's a good time, yeah. And it's a small crop, so there's sort of less stress at the winery, I think, too.
Yeah, really good time, yeah. I wouldn't say I've seen a smiling winemaker yet because it's not quite that stressed. but yeah, it's a great time to visit. You see all the grapes going up and down the roads.
What, are you telling me you're still sleeping in a bed inside the winery for 6 weeks? Or
we're still going to walk the same number of rows, even if the crop's a little bit less than normal. So yeah,
okay.
It's still quite busy.
Yep. Yeah. All right. And finally, what about actually the experience at Black Hills? I know you've done a lot of work there. What can people expect when they visit there?
Yeah, well, I think when you come to Black Hills, we slow you down. We sit you down outside and give you a time to experience the wines. We've got a good range of white and red wines there. You can choose your experience from two or three different options.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a quiet, slow paced, sit down and enjoy the wine in their natural setting kind of
experience. Any chance people see you while they're there? Or?
Quite often, actually. Now that the sort of GM has been added to my responsibilities, I spend a bit of time over there and really enjoying that. So.
You're enjoying being a GM.
I really am, actually. Yeah. It's good fun. Yep.
So you can actually approve the budget for winemaking now.
Exactly.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, we'll just have to shift it from somewhere else, I guess.
Ross, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I really enjoy the wines at Black Hills, and I love how you've taken them sort of under your wing and really done a great job. But for people listening, we talked earlier about Tinhorn. You got a really good thing going over there. Those wines are being tweaked and really are starting to jump out of the bottle as well. Well, we recently visited Red Rooster and had a great time. And Grey Monk is still there. It's a landmark in the north.
Yep, we've got some good things going on. Jen at Grey Monk, Leandro at Tinhorn, they're really lifting the game. So it's great stuff. Yep.
That was Ross Wise, Master of Wine and Director of Winemaking at Black Hills and Director of Winemaking for Andrew Peller across British Columbia. Still to come, from the Okanagan's Black Sage Bench, we head south to San Francisco and recall a wine festival conversation we had with Master Sommelier Evan Goldstein. It's Big Reds for a big new year.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Your next corporate event or retreat deserves the best. The Watermark Beach Resort. With conference spaces to host large or small gatherings, they can create your perfect event or gathering. Enjoy the culinary excellence of 15 Park Bistro, open daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at 15 Park Bistro for the latest updates on their brand new dinner series. To make a reservation or learn more about events at Watermark, just go to watermarkbeachresort.com.
Join Anthony Gismondi and BC Food and Wine Radio at the 45th Vancouver International Wine Festival, February 24th to March 3rd, 2024. Discover Italy at the International Festival Tastings, featuring 149 wineries from 12 countries. Tickets are on sale now. Plus, get a free tasting ticket worth up to $135 when you book a downtown hotel via stayvancouverhotels.com. Don't wine and drive. The festival runs February 24th to March 3rd at the Vancouver Convention Center and other venues. Full details at vanwinefest.ca. Escape to Tinhorn Creek Vineyards on the captivating Gold and Mile Bench in the heart of Oliver's Wine Country. Their wine shop awaits you Thursdays through Sundays from 11:30 to 4:30. Embrace the season with their Blanc de Blanc Sparkling, adding a lively note to your winter wanderings. Explore the wonders of the South Okanagan, where nature's beauty meets the art of winemaking. Plan your visit at tinhorn.com. Ready to welcome you.
At Noble Vines, they believe the best brings out the best. That's why they take only the most admired vines to develop their wines, including the 242 Sauvignon Blanc, which originated in Bordeaux, France. These superior vine stocks adapted well to their premier vineyards in Monterey, California, producing a medium-bodied wine with great acidity, zesty aromas of ripe lemon, and flavors of golden peach with lime. Available exclusively through BCL Select at your local BC liquor store. Find out more at noblevines.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but here's my number, so call me maybe.
Hello, British Columbia, across the province to our network of 25 cities, enjoying our stories each week. We're talking about big red wines today. Often when I ask people what kind of wines they like, they say, I like big red wines, but that doesn't really mean much. We want to delve a little bigger into what big red wines is, and who better to do that than Evan Goldstein? He's a master sommelier. We spoke with Evan at the Vancouver International Wine Festival last spring and chatted about California Cabernet Sauvignon, and he's got a fantastic new fun project with the San Francisco Giants, and where they're offering big red wines in the ballpark. Here's our conversation with San Francisco native and master sommelier Evan Goldstein. How are you, Evan?
I'm doing terrific, Tony. How are you?
I'm really well. Glad to pull you away from some work. I wanted to talk to you today about California Cabernet Sauvignon. Mm-hmm. Long history, many different stories. Maybe we could just sort of run through the start of it, the changes that have happened, and where we're at today, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Cabernet Sauvignon, without question, is the number one grape in the state today for wine production. Obviously, there's Thompson Seedless and lots of table grapes, but for wine, many people thought, and for many years, Chardonnay was actually our number one grape, but Cabernet passed it a year ago, so it represents about 20% of what we grow, as opposed to about 19 and change, which is where Chardonnay is. And most of it, of course, is planted in Napa Valley, as many people know, represents some, 9,000 hectares of land, and then San Luis Obispo and then Sonoma County for the top three areas. But beyond that, it's all over the state. And to your point, it's got a very rich history within the state.
And internationally, Cabernet Sauvignon is probably the most recognized red wine, varietal wine in the world.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense to me, really, in some ways. So I don't know, maybe you can explain to me what the attraction is.
Well, it's interesting. I think when you people think about wine in general and you ask people for what their go-to is for premium and what wine's aspirationally about to be, for a lot of people it's Bordeaux. And of course, Cabernet Sauvignon and Bordeaux are associated. And then the second largest plantings of Cabernet in the world outside of France, and Bordeaux being a large part of that, of course, are Chile. And Chile's number one grape as well is Cabernet Sauvignon in the United States. It's also Cabernet. Yeah. So I think quietly, and I don't hold me to this, but I believe Cabernet is the most planted grape in the world right now for quality vinifera wines.
Yeah. Well, I go back to my earliest beginnings with Cabernet would be with the 68 California Cabernets, which I discovered sort of in the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. How about you?
I actually go back about the same time. I had the privilege, when I got into the business, of having some wines from the 40s and 50s and that famous 58 and 59 Hearts Martha's Vineyard and all of that. But most of mine were in the 60s and early 70s.
Yeah. How different were those wines than the wines today?
Well,
they
were a little bit different. And it's actually, we're going kind of back to the future because we're returning to that style more and more. But today, I think when you say California Cabernet to a lot of people, they think these sort of high octane, big red wines on steroids with a lot of oak, a lot of extract, and a tremendous amount of concentration. Back then, wines were lower in alcohol level. They were not quite as ripe as they were then. They leaned a little bit more into that herbal character, which is part of the signature of what Cabernet is all about.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see that come back again, but we went through a fairly dense period for a while.
Would you say that was consumer driven or winery driven? Or
I think it was a combination of both. I think some people sort of felt like those wines were a little bit too green for them, and wineries started pushing it a little bit more. But then, as you recall, when third-party critics came out, whether it was most notably Robert Parker, but Wine Spectator and a number of other things, they sort of fanned this whole thing of big, jammy, flavorful wines that people fell in love with, became very much a style, and became almost signature associated with the state of California.
Okay, well, I thought you used the word style, so let's talk a bit about that. Let's start with Napa and Sonoma. Those are the ones people know the best, and we'll move from there. What, how would you describe those two styles, or can you?
Well, no, I actually think you can. For me, let's start with Napa because it is the big gun, right? And Napa, there's sort of two distinctive styles that I look at first. One being the grapes that are coming on the valley floor versus those that are growing up in the mountains, because the ones that are on the valley floor tend to be not quite as tannic, richer, rounder, often more jammier, more fruit-driven, etc. As you move up into the hills, you don't get quite as much yields. The soils are not quite as fertile, so the wines tend to have a bit more backbone, a bit more spine.
Yeah.
The tannins tend to be a bit grittier, a bit harder. They're probably more collectible and age-worthy, but they represent really almost two spectrums.
Berries are smaller, all of that intensity.
All those things, absolutely. Yeah. Sonoma, on the other hand, doesn't have as much of what I would call that sort of super uber fruit forwardness that you find there. The wines tend to be more savory. I find that most of my European friends that like Cabernet Sauvignon tend to like Sonoma side more than they like the Napa side. The wines tend to have a brighter, crunchier acidity, probably something to do with the Pacific Ocean's proximity, etc. Yeah. And I hate to say it, and my Napa friends are going to beat me, but they tend to be a little bit more Euro in style. Yeah.
I'm more of a Knights Valley guy. I'm just kidding. But anyway, that's a nice spot too.
Literally. No, it's literally in between. And, you know, if you could show me a more compelling take on a Bordelais-style Cabernet Sauvignon blend than Les Pavots from Peter Michael, I'd love to taste it.
Okay, let's keep going. What about Mendocino? It's always fun to go up there. They were known for Zin mostly, I think, when I was up there.
But. Yeah, and very much so. And if you look at some of the old great names from up in Mendocino County, whether it's, I don't know, Fetz or Bonterra, some of these other places, particularly moving more inland, not so much towards Anderson Valley and the coast, you do get ripe enough to do that. And while Zinfandel, particularly a lot of the old vine Zinfandels are known there, they've quietly made lovely Cabernet for years. They tend to be a bit more, dare I say, licorice-y in nature. They do have a lot of fruit, too. It's a little bit more black fruited rather than that, but they have great structure.
And I think people, they may not notice, but there has been a shift almost from Monterey up to Mendocino where Cabernet is grown versus where it used to be grown. It's very select now. People actually moving into cooler areas too.
Yeah. No, what's really funny is when we started, I remember when Monterey County was going in the early 80s, and they were planting Cabernet everywhere just because they could. And if there was anything more unpleasant than green, unripe Monterey County Cabernet, don't know what it was.
Yeah.
Now, if you went into the inland areas in the Carmel Valley, that was okay. And now they've sort of pulled most of that out. Most of it's now Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, which makes a lot of sense. You move south into the warmer areas towards southern Monterey County, towards San Luis Obispo, there it's warm enough and it grows well. Yeah. But to your point, Tony, as climates are getting warmer, there are these micro pockets in places that weren't able to do Cabernet before that are doing it again. I was down in Carneros recently, which used to be anathema for Cabernet Sauvignon, and they're planting Cabernet in Carneros again.
Wow. That is climate change. Now, way down south, they've had a lot of success in Paso with Cabernet. How would you describe that style? Say we did Napa, Sonoma style. What's Paso like?
I think Paso, by definition, the further you get into inland. San Luis Obispo County, the warmer it gets. And a lot of it depends on what side. If you're driving down 101, are you on the right side of the road or left? So when you're on the eastern side of the gap, if you will, and it's warmer, you generally tend to get, once again, more high octane. So it's very rare that you're going to find a lower alcohol Cabernet from down in San Luis Obispo. But they do have this wonderful warmth that they're able to capture in. They do tend to use a bit more oak than we do in a lot of other places up north. But when they're done right, there's so many producers, whether it's the leadership of people like Jay Lohr, whether it's the folks at Justin, whether it's Adelaida, there's some people making some Dow, there's some people making some excellent Cabernet in this literally the second largest growing area for Cabernet in the state.
Evan, you are a fountain of info. Now, before you go, folks should know that you're selling wine at baseball games.
I am.
That is so fantastic. That's the start of a wine culture, as far as I'm concerned. But are people drinking Cabernet? Tell us a story.
Yeah. Well, basically, no pun intended, I didn't pull this gig out of a Cracker Jack box. I've been working with the Giants on and off for about 30 years.
The San Francisco Giants. Non-baseball fans.
For non-baseball fans. And a great team, three World Series in 5 years.
Yep.
Actually, not too long
ago. And they didn't cheat.
they didn't steal signs or anything like that.
Yeah.
But so we used to do events over at Candlestick Park, wine tasting by the bay, some interesting promotions. The Giants were the first sports team to serve wine in stadium, which of course makes sense given wine country. But then as we moved over from Candlestick, which was cold, to Oracle Park, then AT&T Park, which is warmer, in the city of San Francisco, it made so much sense for wine to sort of pop up again. So they were doing things here and there. We did a couple of these wine tasting events. Then they got really serious about baseball, won some World Series, world stuff. And then we were calling back, and one of the Giants, who I know well in the senior executive side, called me up and has this really interesting project, which I can't talk about yet because it's a bit premature, but it's going to be extremely cool. And he said, if we're going to do this project, Evan, we're going to do it with you. He said, but it's got to get through MLB. It's probably going to take some time, et cetera. And I said, okay, well, we could talk when it's there. But I said, in the meantime, what about this? What about that? How about this? How about that? And why don't you do that? And by the way, do you know that there's not a single professional sports team that actually has a partnership with a master sommelier?
Yeah.
And he was like, really?
Yeah.
And I was like, yep. I said, there's people that do consulting, but actually have one as part of your DNA? No. So he said, well, let's do it. And we launched last September, and we've been doing stuff ever
since. And what are your seats like?
I've actually had seats for 20 years. I actually own my own seats.
Okay, there you go.
In Section 218. Yeah. Great stadium. But we've been doing things. We kicked off this year with FanFest, which is the annual season thing. We did a wonderful event with our friends from Sonoma County. A couple of players showed up. Jock Peterson, Luke Jackson. They talked about wine. They're both Pinot heads, Pinot Noir heads.
So what can I get if I go to the stadium? What is your plan? Like, what can people order there? What kind of wine can you get?
Yeah, well, you could actually get
real wine?
Real wine. In fact, we sold 80,000 glasses of wine last year.
Wow.
And they range from literally good quality canned wine out in the cheap seats that you can take with you to, premium wines at the sweets levels and all that and everything in between. You can get Silver Oak. You can get Farniente. You can get delicious wines from all sorts of different areas. Mm. And it's just going to get more and more.
Evan, it's always a pleasure to see you. Please come back and see us the next time you're in town.
Oh.
And maybe I'll see you at a game. In fact, Didn't I see you in a rowboat out in the bay trying to catch a ball recently? Or
Shh, don't
was
tell
maybe
anybody.
A guy that looked like you, or was it
Must
you?
Must have been my stunt double, the Skippy the Evil Twin.
That was San Francisco native and master sommelier Evan Goldstein. And we've been talking about Big Reds for a big new year. Still to come, Jillian Balance, another California master sommelier and spokesperson for Stag's Leap Winery in Napa Valley.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Visit Penticton this winter for mountain adventures and South Okanagan wine. Experience the quieter time of year at one of the nearby wineries that stay open year-round and enjoy an intimate winter wine tasting. Stop into the Penticton Visitor Center for discounted lift tickets to Apex Mountain Resort for a day in the snow. Penticton is the perfect destination for your winter getaway. Before you go, check the website for information on wine tours, tasting room hours, and webcams for current conditions. Go to visitpenticton.com.
It's time to think turkey. Your BC turkey farmers work hard all year to bring high-quality products to your table. Whether it's a weeknight dinner or special occasion, turkey is always a delicious source of lean protein, and you can't forget the leftovers. With a great meat-to-bone ratio, you get a great value and multiple meals. So the next time you're wondering what to serve, think turkey. Find recipes, info, and more at bc.canadianturkey.ca. Your favorite wines delivered right to your door. It's easy when you become a Liber Estates Rebel. Rebel Wine Club members enjoy regular shipments of Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings, VIP treatment at the winery, and more. And with easy and convenient online ordering, your wine will be at your door before you know it. Discover more at liberestates.com. Simply great wine.
At Noble Vines, they believe the best brings out the best. That's why they take only the most admired vines to develop their wines, including the 242 Sauvignon Blanc, which originated in Bordeaux, France. These superior vine stocks adapted well to their premier vineyards in Monterey, California, producing a medium-bodied wine with bright acidity, zesty aromas of ripe lemon, and flavors of golden peach with lime. Available exclusively through BCL Select at your local BC liquor store. Find out more at noblevines.com.
What happens when you combine the finest wine grapes with a uniquely rocky terroir? Clos du Soleil invites you to discover the answer. Located in the heart of the Similkameen Valley, Clos du Soleil have dedicated themselves to crafting wines that are a true reflection of this wild and beautiful place. Elegant, ageable, and authentic. Clos du Soleil, where the spirit of the Similkameen speaks through every bottle. Available at closdusoleil.ca and fine restaurants and wine stores near you.
This is BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, across the province and around the globe on our podcast. We're talking about Big Reds today, and we're going to return to Napa Valley. Jillian Balance is a California master sommelier and spokesperson for Stag's Leap Winery. Stag's Leap is one of those mythical Napa wineries located just south of Yountville in the Stag's Leap district. About 240 acres are there, and they were first planted, can you believe it, in 1893. The winery's signature product is a Petit Syrah, which is kind of interesting, and Ludwig Dervin is the new head winemaker who was hired to follow up on Christophe Paubert, the man who really turned the modern Stag's Leap around at the winery. Here's our conversation with Jillian Balance. She's a master sommelier and spokesperson for Stag's Leap Winery. Jillian, it's great to see you. Oh, welcome back.
It's always great to be back here.
Fun to be in Vancouver?
Love it.
Yeah.
Love the city. Love this event.
It's same time zone.
Same time zone. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's
now
great.
Now my boyfriend knows what time I actually get back to the room at night.
Oh, yeah. That's not good.
When I'm in New York, it could be any time.
It
you
could
know?
Be any time,
anyway,
yeah.
It's great to be here. Thank you so
well,
much for
thanks
the
for
opportunity.
Joining us. I know you brought a couple of wines that we're going to talk about. Let's start with Stag's apostrophe S, Stag's Leap Winery.
Why don't we?
Yeah. Where are you and what are you?
So, you know, it can be a little confusing because obviously we have the Stag's Leap District,
yep.
The American Viticultural Area. Mm-hmm. There is also Stag's Leap Wine Cellars
right.
And Stag's Leap Winery, which is us.
Yeah.
However, our estate was founded in 1893 with 100 acres under vine of Mavedra by 1895.
Wow. Wow.
Now, the third steward of the property, Carl Dumani, started commercial production again after Prohibition and World War, economic depression. He bought the property in the late 60s. Right when Warren Winiarski founded Stag's Leap Wine Cellars. And both were really trying to, I don't want to say capitalize, but keep the legend and the lore alive of this being a very sacred hunting ground for the Wapo Indians. And the stags were always leaping in this beautiful place. So why wouldn't you name your winery after
that?
And I mean, it's so great. So they both went to court for about a decade. This was before the district even existed or was named officially. And we had to move our apostrophe to the right. They had to move theirs to the left. Their stag is standing still and ours is leaping. And that is
such
all
a great,
she wrote.
Great description of it. And it's on, let's talk about where it is. It's on the east side of Napa Valley. Which is not the same as the west side.
Very different. And, you know, I think you could spend a lifetime exploring the diversity that exists there. And a lot of times we tend to lump Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon into one category, right? When in fact, as you're pointing out so beautifully, we are on the very eastern edge, really pushing right up against that Vaca range, which is primarily volcanic soil and gets a little bit more sun-baked versus the western side, Mayacamas, where it's more like forested and more alluvial soils.
And they lose the sun earlier.
But that said, we are also in the southern end of the valley. So we get a lot of the San Pablo Bay influence, you know, and the wind patterns really pick up in the late afternoon and sort of cool things down, which is what I think gives our wines a very distinctive, unique profile.
These bloody mesoclimates and things,
I know.
They just confuse everything.
They
make everything
really
so great and complex.
They really do. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, my gosh, Napa Valley subdivided into 16 AVAs. That's a lot for a 30-mile narrow valley. But it's not. When you look at...
there'd be 50 in Burgundy.
There's hundreds. And when I first started studying wine, Australia, there were maybe... 25 GIs, and there's 65 now.
So old vines, what's the status of old vines at Stag's Leap today? Are you looking after them? Are they surviving?
Absolutely. And the ones that don't, we just take cuttings and plant them, you know, pretty much right next door,
replant them.
We, the second owner of the property, brought over a lot of experimental varieties, primarily from the Rhone Valley, southern France, and planted them in 1 5-acre plot on the property, and it still produces a wine for us today. It's mainly Petite Syrah, but there's 16 different varietals growing in that vineyard since 1920.
Wow.
Which is pretty extraordinary. I mean, today with Cabernet, you know, you do want to replant every 30 years or so. But these grapes like Petite Syrah, the real workhorse grapes of the late 1800s, no problem.
No problem at all. Okay, you brought a couple wines. What should we start with?
Well, we should probably start with the Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon because it is the wine that we actually produce the most of. Now, we also make a really delicious Chardonnay, too. So, hence the white label, which means we're not sourcing just from the estate. But we do have access to about 4,000 acres in Napa.
4,000. Wow.
So it gives us the ability to be, well, we can be selective in fire threatened years. Or, you know, it's just great for our winemakers. But this is definitely Southern Valley. Nothing comes from further north of Yountville. So really elegant style. It only sees about 40% new French oak, 20 months of aging. It is a typical Bordeaux style blend, with around 86% Cabernet Sauvignon and the rest Bordeaux varietals.
More red fruit.
Not
so black, but...
I think, and very floral, you know, and the tannins are... They're not as boisterous as when you get up valley to warmer climate areas like Oakville, St. Helena. You know, that's when you really start to get these tannins and the mountain sites, too. So, but very elegant. It's always a crowd pleaser. you know, dare I say, it's not really for people who love a very fruit forward, very lush.
Yeah, no, no. This is a serious wine.
It's a little bit more, elegant and reserved. So,
yeah, I like it.
It's beautiful.
They're both 2019s.
Yep.
So the same age.
Yep,
they'll
exactly.
probably age a little differently, I think, in the long run.
Well, yeah, because the Leap, which is also a Cabernet Sauvignon, is 98% Cabernet. So you're looking at a higher percentage of Cabernet, and it's all coming from our estate vineyards from the oldest blocks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we didn't really talk about how tiny Stag's Leap District is. It's only about 1,500 acres, maybe 18 growers. We have 110 stunningly beautiful acres, only to be, you know, on this property with the manor house that was built in the 1800s. It's a spectacular, unique place to visit.
That's a very different wine. The intensity is just off the charts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
great
it's,
length.
But
it's still elegant.
It's still elegant.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jillian, you're a master sommelier. There wasn't many around when you got into it, I think, especially women, I'm guessing at that, but...
Not at all. And I worked at Windows on the World, you know, down near Wall Street, and all the bankers and stuff would come in and ask for the sommelier, and I would just, like, run over to the table. I had no idea what I was doing at the time, because you know, you got to kind of dive into it.
Yeah, no, totally. Could you please get the sommelier? No, I am.
Yeah, exactly. That's me.
I love it.
And then I passed the exam in 2012. So I became the 18th female in the world.
Wow.
Today there are about 34. A lot of Canadians.
Yeah.
A lot of Canadian females that I love and adore. So,
but it's a brutal exam. It's not for any pikers. Well, like
I don't know. I mean, you know. 24 minutes to identify six wines down to the vineyard and the vintage. I don't know.
Yeah. Not to manage
I think
all.
Anybody can do it.
Yeah, and all the service and all the other things, not just including wine. Like, it's a long slog.
Yeah. Well, I feel very blessed to be able to pay it forward, mentor young candidates. I get really jazzed on that. I work for Stag's Leap Winery, arguably one of the most spectacular properties in Napa Valley.
And Stag's Leap, to get back to the winery, so can we go there? How is it set up? I know there was a lot of visiting during pandemic. What's the story now?
Yeah, and I think that we're still recuperating.
Yeah.
You know, still trying to get hospitality people back into the valley to work.
Yeah.
But we are appointment only because of our exclusivity, because of where we're located.
Yeah.
And so it is by appointment only, but we see about 50 people a day, 60 consumers a day.
And lucky people.
Love to have everybody out. It's such an intimate, wonderful experience to be sitting on the porch of the manor house, surrounded by all of this history of Napa and looking out over the vineyards. It's magical.
I tell people, like, get out of your cars. Like, driving up Highway 29 is not Napa. Get out of your car, walk around, feel the sun, feel the wind, you know, embrace the terroir.
It's interesting. Napa's become a lot more, I see people walking up and down Highway 29 all the time.
Yeah. Oh, I love
Never
to hear
used
that.
To see that like 10 no. years ago, you know? You just had a driver that took you everywhere. People
Jillian,
were walking.
So great to see you. I hope you enjoy Vancouver and get some time to get out and enjoy
Thank
the nightlife
you.
Here and
Thank
you. Some of the restaurants.
Are these wines going to end up in a good place?
Oh, yeah.
Like your belly?
Yeah, I would like them to.
You want me to run out and grab you a ribeye? You know, a nice grilled ribeye to
that
have
be
one?
Nice. Yeah.
They're great wines.
Yeah, maybe
great
about
food.
10 o'clock tonight, maybe.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much.
That was Jillian Balance, California Master Sommelier and spokesperson for Stag's Leap Winery. And that's it for today's show. Special thanks to our technical producer in Vancouver, Dwayne Bishop, assignment editor Sherry Caleb, and director of operations Stu Ferguson. For all of us at the show, I'm Anthony Gismondi, wishing you a great week ahead and an even better glass of wine.
That's it for today's show. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.